You're listening to The Bulletin with UBS, first broadcast on the 13th of December 2015 on Monocle 24.
Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week, we're in Switzerland for the final of the UBS Future of Finance Challenge, a competition in search of the world's most innovative fintech startups that can help transform how UBS serves its global clients. Hundreds of applicants entered, and the finalists flew to Zurich this past Friday to present to a panel of expert judges. We kick off today's show with Roland Harwood, Managing Director and co-founder of 100% Open, the company tasked by UBS to help design this year's event.
Very exciting day today. It's the global finals, culmination of 6 months worth of work. I first came to Zurich on the 1st of July, very first meeting. We wanted to launch this challenge and have it done by Christmas. That was the challenge from Sergio Ermotti, the chief executive. Veronica Lang and her team, the innovation team here at UBS, hired my company, 100% Open, to be the kind of lead agency partner to deliver on this, to design and deliver this whole competition. And we've been involved at every step along the way since then.
First of all, tell me the purpose of the event. I mean, what was really the mission of this event?
The mission of this event is for UBS to embrace the external ecosystem of kind of startups and technology entrepreneurs with interesting disruptive ideas that are transforming the world of financial services right now.
And the people that you found, the contestants, give a bit of background about who those guys are.
They're mostly high growth potential entrepreneurs and startups. Some of them are really early stage. Some of them are even pre-startups, individuals with a great idea. Some of them have had their first round of kind of seed investment or first round of funding, but they're all under $3 million in revenue, all formed since 2010, so less than 5 years old, and they're from all around the world.
Are the startups jittery? Are they nervous?
You should talk to them yourself.
Over 600 startups entered the competition, but only a lucky handful were invited to Zurich to compete before a panel of judges. Before the event began, Monocle caught up with a few of the startup founders.
Hi, my name is Igal and I'm from Wires.
And what does Wires do?
We have a digital platform with a navigation-like system to optimize international wires. We allow the banks to look for the best and cheapest and fastest and optimal route for every international wire. Today, banks are looking for innovation, certainly, and they're looking for ways to become more efficient. They need to cut cost of operations, so they're looking for every way to become more competitive. So certainly, they're looking for innovation.
I'm Graham Steele. I'm the CEO and co-founder of CryptoSense. We're a Paris-based company making software to detect vulnerabilities in cryptography that financial companies use to protect their most sensitive information. I've always been interested in cryptography. So when I was a kid, I used to write my diary and a code to stop my brother from reading it. It's been my thing. I studied maths, I studied computer science, and then it was a natural progression towards making a company that would put those ideas in practice. We're really at that stage where we're trying to move from being just a startup with a few small deployments to a major deployment with a big bank, and that's really what we're looking for here. That's the big prize for us.
Hi, I'm Steve Hoffman. I'm the CEO and founder of SayPay Technologies. What SayPay does is we've reinvented the way authentications take place that allow for a better user experience, for better security, and for lower costs for banks. Our whole idea is based on voice biometric authentication, being able to use something you already have, your phone, to eliminate passwords, speak a one-time code each time for every transaction or every time you sign in, where we verify the phone, we verify the code, and we verify the user's voice. Three-factor authentication, better security, no additional hardware, no passwords to remember, and it's a lot more cost-effective for banks.
Yeah, I mean, so many startups and articles and things are written about, you know, the post-password era. What are we going to replace passwords with? This is your kind of solution.
Absolutely. Passwords are the biggest nemesis to both users and to banks. Users hate them because they can't remember all of them, and they're also constructed insecurely. They're used across websites, so the security people at the banks hate them as well. It's time to get rid of passwords, and the technology is there to be able to do that.
I'm Pearson Talbert with the Healthcare TTU out of Nashville, Tennessee.
So what do you guys do?
So we make it easier for health systems and banks to do business with one another. So we serve as an independent, neutral third party between a financial transaction. We function as a financial utility, giving banks better visibility into the performance of healthcare receivables. And by doing that, banks can lend at higher rates at reduced costs so they can generate more revenues for themselves and provide a great social benefit to health systems throughout the United States currently by reducing their cost of operations. Our solution, which we call frictionless healthcare finance, really applies across the globe. By operating as a utility, we're not specifically looking just at healthcare receivables. What we're really looking at is any industry with indeterminate payment timing. We focus on U.S. healthcare just because it's an enormous industry with a big cost problem, frankly. It's 18% of U.S. GDP, which is about 7 percentage points higher than any other nation around the world.
I'm Matt DeLorso, one of the co-founders of WealthForge. And WealthForge is a financial technology company that's really building the next generation, empowering the next generation of private capital markets. We have a platform that processes online private placement investments. We've really appreciated getting to speak with UBS and how a platform like ours could be integrated inside of their systems, because they do private placements manually now, and they see a lot of benefits from our platform and its efficiencies. So obviously some understanding of how larger institutions and corporations could use our platform. And then it's awareness. It's great awareness for us to be at this event and be considered one of the companies shaping the future of finance.
Hi, I'm Bernard Del Rey, CEO of Capital Preferences, a game theory and decision science company based in California. The idea came from looking at the problems that exist in how financial services companies get to know their clients. And by the identification of the problem, I came across my co-founder, who's chair of the economics department at Berkeley. And through our collaboration together, we've invented a series of investment games that we can deliver to financial institutions and to consumers that help consumers understand their financial preferences and then get the type of help they need from financial services companies.
Just some of the startup founders there, speaking at the final of the Future of Finance Challenge in Zurich. Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll speak with UBS's Group Chief Information Officer. We'll hear from an expert about the future of fintech, and we'll meet the winner of this year's competition. We're at the final of the UBS Future of Finance Challenge. Let's hear now from Oliver Bussman, Group CIO at UBS, about the importance of innovation and why they run the event in the first place.
This event was the grand final, the global final of our Innovation Challenge Future of Finance, to bring the fintech ecosystem with over 4,000 startups out there globally together with the U.S. community, the business community, and figure out if there's a match. And we ask four questions from is there a way to improve our customer experience? Is there anything, new products out there that we can integrate? Is there a way to get more efficient? Is there a way also to make our business more secure? As the CIO, you have different roles, and one of the roles is to be head coach, preparing and working environment that brings innovation and digital disruption into the bank and bring those people together out of this ecosystem and then also within the UBS. And it's important because our industry is going to a major change, because there are a lot of investments are happening right now in that fintech business. Last year, over $12 billion. The forecast for this year is $20 billion. So there's a lot of resources, investment, money invested in those topics that will digitalize our business. And the future is, I think, we want to continue doing this. Maybe more specific for lines of business or by region, but I think we have now the infrastructure in place. You can imagine the logistic to organize that globally in the region and do this also to figure out who's out there in the ecosystem. There's an effort and it needs infrastructure that is now in place, and we want to continue doing that, because at the end, it's us bringing closer us to community, plus it's a feeder for ideas that we can embrace in a much more efficient and effective way. Because if you go to Silicon Valley or London, maybe you can meet maximum 3-4 startups per day, and then you're exhausted. So this is a very well-organized selection process, and I'm very pleased that we did this. And it's also to mobilize our businesses and our executives to continue to spend more time on this important topic of the future of our industry.
One man who knows a thing or two about the current state and future of fintech is Professor Andreas Dietrich. He gives us a roundup of the industry.
By definition, it's a mix between financial industry and technology. So this sounds very easy, but if you ask yourself, so what is a fintech company? you really find yourself in a difficult position. Is a software developer already a fintech company, or is a business-to-business, for example, in the business process outsourcing area already a fintech company? So this is all actually something that is not clarified yet also in the academics. How to define fintech.
What are the trends that we've seen in 2015? Because it's rapidly evolving. Recent trends, recent companies that have caught your eye.
Well, one thing is that there's much more funding in the market now. So a lot of markets in the US, but also in Asia, they really got a lot of money. They're really raising a lot of money. Not so far in Switzerland. The market still remains very small. So this is one point. The other point is I think there are new topics in the market that really kind of get some hype as well. For example, blockchain. I think 2015 was a little bit the year of blockchain for me. So this topic, I think this really became aware now also for a lot of banks that this might be one of the future finance topics that banks need to consider now already. Blockchain is a technology that is decentralized. So this means that you don't need like a central intermediary that takes all the information. But there are a lot of different kind of ledgers in different kind of areas. And for example, if you make a transaction, it's in all blocks, in all the blockchains. It's kind of safe there. And it's also, you're not dependent anymore on one central party, but it's more decentralized in a lot of kind of different kind of parties.
Is the industry accelerating to an extent that banks are accepting it readily, or are they kind of afraid of new upstarts who are kind of shaking up the status quo?
Very different if you ask different kind of banks. There are some banks who kind of now know that the strategy must be that they have to collaborate with fintechs, that they need to work together with fintechs, and that fintechs are not their enemies. And there are some other banks who really think that they are afraid of fintechs, they don't want to do anything with fintechs because they just hope that they disappear again. So you can really see very different strategies from banks how to deal with these new startups and this new development in the fintech area.
Looking at the competitors today, I mean, how easy were the deliberations in the judges' conference panel when you guys went away and talked about who might win?
Actually, very difficult because the business models and the ideas were so different that you really need to find out so which one is the best and which is also really kind of the future of the finance. So we had a lot of discussion, more than actually expected, from also from the organizers, because there are many different kind of cases that are interesting for a bank. And I would also recommend the UBS not only to follow the best three, but maybe to work also with the other nine that didn't win the first three prizes today.
And finally, every competition must have a winner. And the lucky winner this year was the London-based startup Aesthetic Integration. Their solution automatically analyzes financial algorithms for glitches and unfair behavior. After their big win, we caught up with the Aesthetic Integration team to hear all about it.
So we are Aesthetic Integration, totally honored to have won. The idea behind the company is that finance, in particular finance going forward, the future of finance, runs on algorithms. And these algorithms have to be correct, safe, and fair. So there's actually an area of mathematics, computer science, called formal verification. The whole purpose of this area is to analyze algorithms, to be able to mathematically verify whether or not they can violate certain principles. Formal verification is already relied upon in safety-critical industries like avionics and hardware design, but it hadn't been brought to finance. And so a bit on our backgrounds, we were actually roommates in college for 3 years, undergrads, and Dennis went to Wall Street, became a trader, ultimately ran the central risk desk at Deutsche in London. I became an academic, and I did my PhD in this area in Edinburgh, and then I moved down to Cambridge as a postdoc, working effectively on these related techniques for analyzing autopilot algorithms and things like avionics and self-driving cars. So you have this incredible engineering artifact, a self-driving car that seems to work, but how do you regulate it? How do you make it safe so you'd feel comfortable putting your mother in it? You have to develop regulatory mathematics for making sure these dynamic objects, these algorithms, are making sensible decisions and they're safe. So we had the idea maybe 2.5, 3 years ago?
3 years ago. At the time, as Grant mentioned, I was working at Deutsche Bank. I was in charge of a fairly complex risk trading desk. So imagine this group of people that are developers, quants, and traders that are responsible for processing and creating a system that automatically made pricing decisions and inventory management decisions for the bank. And at any point in time, to maintain billions of dollars of exposure out in the market, and obviously all of this is happening with a background of things like Knight Capital, which you might have heard about, and there are many other glitches that have cost banks a lot of money. And Grant and I were talking about these things, and we realized this deep connection between the things that finance is dealing with today, i.e. being able to manage the complexity of these algorithms and other safety-critical industries like hardware or avionics. And we realized that the technology and the science is at a level where it's scalable to finance, and the opportunity could not be bigger right now, and the time is perfect. It's also worth mentioning that when we started pitching this idea, I mean, no one has ever heard of formal verification. And our biggest difficulty was presenting this thing. It was to actually explain it. Listen, there's actually science to a lot of these things.
So you're saying nobody at the bank or no VCs?
In finance, period. When you go,
and VCs this is, too, I would say.
By the way, this is not, you know, unless we were roommates, I would not have known about this either. So this is not to say that. A lot of it is just luck or random things. But our biggest challenge was to explain. Listen, you're spending so much time and money on compliance costs, QA, development, regulation, the whole thing. And there is actually a scientific way to approach that. And I think another great side effect of having this opportunity to speak in front of UBS is to really engage people in the very, you know, senior level, as senior as it gets, on a global investment bank, to really showcase that there is actually a scientific way to approach these things. And I think, you know, something that we're very thankful for is the time that they've given us, and I think also the consideration of the effects of cost-cutting opportunities and efficiency opportunities that the banks will see going forward from this science.
And that's the team behind Aesthetic Integration, the winners of the UBS Future of Finance Challenge, bringing us to the end of this 62nd edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance, every week, right here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com, or catch up via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.